Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, Alec Baldwin remembers his TV mom, Elaine Stritch.
Jack, what the hell are you up to?
Mother, I'm sorry, but the Lemons invited me out and I couldn't say no. They're very nice people.
Oh, nice. I'll show you nice. Let's all meet down at the soda shop while this country turns into Mexico.
Now, you see, they don't say things like that. They're very polite to each other.
I suppose you think that they're more nurturing than I am.
Mother, there are terrorist cells that are more nurturing than you are.
Be careful. I'll cry.
There they are from 30 Rock. Baldwin on Stritch right here later this hour. Also today, as Mayor de Blasio packs for his Italy vacation, and maybe he'll be listening while he packs, we will talk to the man he has appointed acting mayor for the next 9 days, first deputy mayor, Anthony Shoris, and the return of multi-generational living, not just young adults living with their parents when they can't find a job after college, but middle-aged adults having their parents move in with them. We'll explore the intimacy versus the autonomy and the economics of the new multi-generational life in the United States. But first, why the downing of Flight 17 shows that Putin has lost control of a war he helped to start. In a minute, we'll talk to New Republic writer Julia Yaffe. She's going to join us to explain why this represents Putin losing control of a situation that he initiated. We can also take your phone calls. We're all so horrified by this. It's everybody's worst nightmare. You're flying innocently in a jetliner and you are shot out of the sky. I mean, it's sort of 9/11 level of horror, a very different kind of incident. Apparently, best reporting seems to show that it was a mistake, at least those are the early indications, by pro-Russia rebels in eastern Ukraine who thought they were shooting down some kind of Ukrainian military aircraft, but still. So, listeners, what do you want to say about this? What are you thinking about this issue? What do you think the United States should do about this issue, if anything, or the Europeans? I want to play a clip of Hillary Clinton, who has a history of being fond of denouncing Vladimir Putin. She came out with a statement on Charlie Rose last night that seemed to urge Europe to be outraged on their own behalf.
So the Europeans have to be the ones to take the lead on this. It was a flight from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur. Right. Over European territory. There should be outrage in European capitals.
So we'll ask Julia Yaffe in a minute if there's an issue of the U.S. being outraged that Europe, more outraged than Europe, about threats to European security. 212-433-WNYC. Anybody listening in Amsterdam today? We've been getting calls from all over the world lately. So anyone in Europe, anyone in Eastern Europe, anyone in Central Europe want to weigh in on this, or anyone in the United States, 212-433-WNYC. You can just call to mourn people if you want. There were 100 AIDS specialists on that plane, I heard reported, on their way to an international conference. Not that anybody's life is worth more than anybody else's life, but it just adds even more horror, or just makes it more personal when you think of these doctors or biologists or whatever they were going to an international conference to try to solve the global AIDS crisis. 212-433-9692. And here's more of Clinton on Charlie Rose, more egging the Europeans on. She gets specific here about things they can do. And interestingly, at the beginning of this, she talks about whether evidence will link Russia itself to the downing of Flight 17. Listen.
If there is evidence linking Russia to this, that should inspire the Europeans to do much more on three counts. One, toughen their own sanctions, make it very clear there has to be a price to pay. Number two, immediately accelerate efforts and announce they are doing so to find alternatives to Gazprom. You know, Russia has not diversified its economy. It is still largely dependent upon natural resources, principally gas and oil. And thirdly, do more in concert with us to support the Ukrainians and to put Putin on notice that he has gone too far and we are not going to stand idly by.
Hillary Clinton on Charlie Rose, and with us now is New Republic senior editor Julia Yaffe. Julia, welcome back to WNYC. Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Let me go to the thesis of your article, which I mentioned to the listeners a minute ago, which is that the downing of Flight 17 shows that Putin has lost control of a war that he helped to start. Want to elaborate on that?
Sure. You know, it depends how far back you want to go. Do you want to go back to November, when all these protests in Kiev started? But basically, after the protests were successful in toppling the Viktor Yanukovych, the Russia-friendly president of Ukraine, Putin decided to take advantage of a chaotic situation in Ukraine and to extract concessions from them and to get land from them. It was a fairly smooth process with Crimea, but the goal was very clear also. It was just to get that piece of land back, to get the base of his naval fleet back. With eastern Ukraine, the goals weren't as clear. It was to destabilize Ukraine, to make it seem like a failed state, and to make it less attractive member for the EU and NATO. Problem with that is, you know, how do you know when you've achieved your goal? How chaotic is chaotic enough? And the problem is when I was there, what you see is a Russian state television, the Russian propaganda machine has done such a great job there, and people there watch it to the exclusion of pretty much everything else. And they really believe that what Moscow is saying is true, that a fascist horde is bearing down on them from Kiev, and that it's coming to kill them and kill their children and rape their women and steal their land. And people get scared and men go and take up arms. It's hard to turn that off, because a lot of these people aren't puppets doing this totally cynically. A lot of these people really think they're fighting for a cause and fighting for their land.
Your thesis, of course, assumes that it was pro-Russia rebels in eastern Ukraine who shot down Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 yesterday. How certain are we of that at this point?
We're not certain. I think we're getting more and more leaks in the media overnight and this morning. First, we had sources confirming to reporters yesterday evening that it was, in fact, a surface-to-air missile that shot down the airliner, which is important because it wasn't an air-to-air missile, so it couldn't have been, you know, an air-to-air missile would mean that it's a fighter jet, either Russia or Ukraine. Surface-to-air missile, the rebels have, and they've bragged about having this, and they bragged about its ability to down airplanes. And then we had another leak this morning saying that from the U.S. intelligence community saying that they're pretty certain that it was the rebels.
And how confident are you that it was a mistake, as the leading theory seems to have it, that they thought they were downing a Ukrainian military plane, not a civilian airliner?
Well, you have these leaked recordings that the Ukrainian security services have leaked between the rebel leader in the region and his curator back in Russia, saying, you know, we downed a plane. We thought it was a military cargo plane, which, you know, just a couple hours before we heard about the crash of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17. The rebels were bragging that they had downed a Ukrainian military aircraft. Problem is, nobody found the remnants of that aircraft. And then you have this leaked, intercepted phone call where he's saying, you know, we thought we downed this. It wasn't an Antonov. It wasn't, this cargo plane. It was a civilian jet.
And assuming that that was the case and it was a mistake, how does that back up your theory that the incident shows that Putin has lost control? Because presumably after this horrible tragedy, a similar mistake will not take place again with respect to innocent people. There may be a war going on between Ukraine and these rebels in the east, but that's a local issue. How does this indicate that Putin has lost control in a way that matters outside?
Because, a lot of intelligence, both from the Ukrainian and American sides and from reports from reporters on the ground, has been indicating that Russia is continuing to arm these rebels. The rebels themselves, you know, the longer they keep fighting, the better they get, the, you know, more hardline they get. They're capturing weapons and military material from the Ukrainian military. I don't think Putin set out, what I mean is I don't think Putin set out to say, you know, it would be great if we downed a civilian jetliner full of EU citizens, because part of Putin's strategy has been driving a wedge between the U.S. and the EU when it comes to sanctions. Something like this would obviously unify them. I also don't think Putin is, you know, like a bloodthirsty dictator who wants the death of children. I think this is, you know, what I mean when I say he lost control is he's been arming these guys and empowering them and kind of riling them up with his propaganda machine. And they become more and more fearless. They capture more equipment from the Ukrainian military. And then something like this happens. They've been downing Ukrainian military jets over the last month. And then, you know, inevitably they're going to miss. But I don't think this is what Putin set out to do.
On WNYC, Brian Lehrer with you. As we talk about the context of the Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 tragedy over eastern Ukraine yesterday, with Julia Yaffe, who has an expertise in this part of the world and is a senior editor at The New Republic. We have a board full of calls, and I want to start with an interesting question, I think, from Dan in Kingston. Dan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, so my question is, what was going through the heads of those airline pilots? Why were they flying over eastern Ukraine? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you. And it probably wasn't up to the pilots. But I heard, Julia, that the U.S. already instructs its civilian airliners not to fly over eastern Ukraine. But for some reason, European countries, including, you know, this flight originated in Amsterdam, still were flying over that very dangerous airspace. Is that the case?
There seem to be a lot of reports out there indicating that this is not quite the usual route. The usual route was a little bit more to the south and west out of this area. One report I heard yesterday was that it was pushed farther north and east into this area by storms. Russian media has also been reporting. They had a kind of a diagram showing how this route was a deviation from the ones that had been taken by the same flight the previous consecutive days. So something made them change their trajectory.
And more on that, I think, from Richard in Nyack. Richard, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
Having just heard about the possible change in the flight plan, it makes me wonder when the plane. This is a Malaysian Airlines. This is the same airline that lost the plane in the Indian Ocean that's never been found. Why didn't the Ukrainian air traffic controllers tell them, you know, avoid flying over this, you're flying over a war zone? And secondly, about Putin losing control, you know, as the Ukrainian forces capture sophisticated weapons, you know, if Putin's people had control, they would be exercising a lot more scrutiny about how these weapons get used. And they're certainly sophisticated to know the difference between a civilian airliner and a military plane.
Right. Good point. Putin's government has that sophistication. Apparently the rebels did not.
Right.
And Julie, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry to interrupt. A lot of these guys aren't trained. A lot of these guys are coal miners who picked up weapons because of all the garbage they heard on all the alarming garbage they heard on Russian state TV, which is beamed into the area. And there have been a number of reports that indicate that this particular missile system, the screen that indicates, you know, what you're shooting at, doesn't really, it's hard to differentiate. There have been a number of reports that say that you might not know what you're shooting at. You just know that you're shooting at some kind of plane. And as for Putin, you know, losing control, I've said this a lot. Putin is described as by people who love and hate him as this brilliant strategist. He's not. He's an excellent, excellent tactician. And he knows how to play a situation to his advantage, but that doesn't mean he thinks it all the way through. He's a good tactician, but not a good strategist. And this is what we're seeing play out these last couple of days.
We played that clip just before you came on of Hillary Clinton on Charlie Rose last night, who said if there's evidence linking Russia to this, it should inspire the Europeans to take a number of actions against Russia. And I wonder how you hear that phrase, evidence linking Russia to this. Would that just mean if Putin's government supplied the pro-Russia rebels with arms in eastern Ukraine with this kind of surface-to-air missile that they would have used?
Yes, although there's also, at least it was being discussed yesterday, because there was another airplane that was a Ukrainian military airplane that was downed in previous days, I think on July 12th, where there was speculation on whether or not the missile that brought down that military airplane had come from Russian territory. So we still don't know if this came from separatists, if it came from Russian territory. If it came from Russian territory, that's a whole horrible different ballgame. If it's coming from separatists, Russia can very not extremely plausibly, but somewhat plausibly can say, look, we don't know where they got this stuff from. Maybe some, you know, there's a lot of corruption in Russia and somebody sold it to them. We had nothing to do with it. They could more easily kind of fudge their way out of that one.
And this may have been a mistake, but your article makes clear that the rebels have been downing Ukrainian military planes, actual Ukrainian military planes, with increasing regularity. So it's really war over there at that level, huh?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, the first one came in on June 4th when they downed a Ukrainian military aircraft and killed something like 49 Ukrainian troops. But that was, I think, when it was, you know, it was the classic scenario where the plane was coming in for a landing. And that's when aircraft takeoff and landing are when aircrafts are very susceptible to this, because that's when you can get them with a, you know, shoulder-fired missile. But the last couple of days, they've been bragging about their capabilities of taking out planes at much higher altitudes.
Here is Pavel calling in from Ottawa, Canada. Pavel, hello from New York. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Brian. I wanted to comment on Julia's comment about Putin paying the price and unintended consequences of his actions that he started in Ukraine. She's absolutely right on. You know, the buck stops with the CEO. This is a very sophisticated anti-missile system that somehow got transferred across the border. People knew how to use it. And sadly, unfortunately, they were incompetent to identify a passenger craft over military. But the Russian society at large will pay the price for this tragic mistake that started by its thuggish regime and by the main, you know, the CEO. That's pretty much it.
Thank you, Pavel. The thuggish regime, the CEO. And just this week, one day before this tragedy, President Obama announced new sanctions on Russia because of the situation in Ukraine, which, Julia, as you know, had been out of the headlines here in the U.S. for a while. So I want to replay part of that announcement by the president on Wednesday that most media didn't cover and most Americans didn't hear.
Today I have approved a new set of sanctions on some of Russia's largest companies and financial institutions. Along with our allies, with whom I've been coordinating closely the last several days and weeks, I've repeatedly made it clear that Russia must halt the flow of weapons and fighters across the border into Ukraine, that Russia must urge separatists to release their hostages and support a ceasefire, that Russia needs to pursue internationally mediated talks and agree to meaningful monitors on the border.
So, Julia Yaffe, I don't know if he was prescient or what doing this on Wednesday. Why did Obama announce new sanctions just this week, and is the timing of this incident coming the next day merely a coincidence?
I think it is a coincidence. It's one that I think proves Obama right on the need for more sanctions. You know, it kind of takes away any leg the Russians had to stand on in criticizing these sanctions. But the reason they were announced when they were is, there was an escalation over the weekend, and the United States Department of Defense released a statement that they were seeing really heavy military equipment crossing the border from Russia into Ukraine, including tanks. There was, as I mentioned, on July 12th, there was this the downing of a Ukrainian military plane at a really high altitude, which couldn't have been done with your, you know, standard jihadi, you know, shoulder-fired missile. And it indicated to U.S. officials that Putin was not only not walking it back, but funneling more and more very dangerous equipment to these guys. The talk in Moscow, from what I've seen from people who have been critical of Putin and his government in Moscow, have been saying, you know, this is what happens when you give a monkey a grenade. That meaning that these guys, that they've been giving all this heavy military material, stuff that started with sniper rifles and Kalashnikovs and helmets and bulletproof vests, and then going to tanks and, surface-to-air missiles, you know, truck-mounted surface-to-air missiles. When you give them to guys who don't really know what they're doing, you know, to coal miners and teachers who just picked up a gun a couple months ago, this is what's going to happen.
David in Monroe, you're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Hi. I just like to actually make a comment about what Hillary Clinton said about how the Europeans should take a more, a harder stance and be more outraged at the whole situation. It's my belief that, for the most part, the U.S. has been the dominant partner in dealing with international situations, especially when it deals with the Europeans, and they've been more or less inclined to either sit back and let us do more of the heavy lifting. But I feel that she is right, that they need to step up to the plate this time.
David, thank you. And what about the dynamics of that? I think they're fascinating, Julia. And your article says that this is a game changer precisely because it brings the security of the rest of Europe into this regional conflict in eastern Ukraine. But why would we need Hillary Clinton or any American to tell the Europeans that they should be more outraged than they are about something that's a security threat to them, not us? Posturing because she's running for president?
No, I mean, that's definitely been the talk inside the U.S. government now for a while. But at the same time, people seem to be understanding of the fact that Europe is in a very different situation than we are. Russia is not even close to being a major trading partner for the U.S. It is a massive trading partner for many countries in Europe. Germany gets something like 2/3 of its natural gas from Russia. You know, if U.S. officials are wary about any sanctions they impose having spillover effects on the U.S. economy, which they are, and that this is why you're seeing these weirdly highly surgical sanctions being put in effect, you know, trying to make sure that this doesn't blow back and blow up in the U.S.'s face economically. The Europeans have fewer avenues for doing that. They're just much more interdependent with Russia. I think it was in their interests, in their immediate interest, to categorize this, pigeonhole this as a frozen regional conflict that's far away. And, we can push on the diplomacy and sanction them periodically, very lightly, so that it doesn't affect our own economies, but just kind of brush this under the rug. What happened yesterday just kind of blew that rug right off. I mean, this very clearly shows Europe that they could be very much harmed by this if this isn't solved.
Let's take one more call, and it's Namin in Westchester, remembering an incident with some echoes here from a few decades ago. Namin, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I'm an Iranian-American here, and my heartfelt condolences for the family for this tragedy. And international community, rightly so, has to be outraged and bring the perpetrators to justice. But I would like to remind you that we had the same tragedy back in the 1980s when the aircraft carrier Vincent was in Persian Gulf, and they downed the Iranian Airbus with almost 300 people. And the soldier who did that, they rejoiced on the when they saw the aircraft is coming down with the corpses on the water. They were rejoicing, but to rub the salt on the wound, this happened during Mr. Reagan's time. By the time Mr. Bush came to presidency, they honored the commander of the Vincent with the Medal of National Honor. And this is where Iranian people outraged. Not only we didn't see any apology, any regret, no compensation, but the commander was honored with National Medal of Honor.
Nameen, thank you. And we have a few Iranian-American callers on the board, I should note, wanting to make that same point about that historical incident. Julia, are you familiar with that history? And
yes.
Is it the way he tells it that it was another case of mistaking presumably a civilian aircraft for a military one, in that case by the United States, and that no apology was ever forthcoming?
I don't know about the details of that. I just know that, it was they thought it was a missile and they shot it down. I don't know about whether or not there was an apology or a Medal of Honor. If that's the case, that's atrocious and exactly like something that Vladimir Putin would do.
And I don't know, actually. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's the kind of it smacks of that. But I should note that this is not neither that incident nor the what we saw yesterday is unfortunately they are not. I mean, this happens. Everybody yesterday was talking about the Korean airliner that was downed by Soviets also in the 80s when it entered Soviet airspace. And instead of trying to make contact with the plane and, you know, figure out why it had mistakenly entered Soviet airspace, they just shot it down. Also, lots of people were killed. There was actually about in 2001 Russian airliner was shot down by Ukrainian forces over Crimea. How's that for irony? It was I think headed from Siberia to Israel, and I think nearly 100 people were killed. This happens, unfortunately.
Well, the investigation goes on, and the ramifications yet to be determined. Julia Yaffe writes about the region for The New Republic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.